This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast episode number 6, being recorded on Wednesday, March the 8th, 2006.
Hey kids, are you looking for an exciting career in the world of broadcasting?
Uh-huh.
But afraid you don't have the skills or talent to make it?
Uh-uh.
Well, now you don't need either. At the Parviz Vitali School of Broadcasting, we'll show you that going on the air is just as easy as breathing air. Just listen to what our founder has to say.
Because I don't hang out with what's her nuts.
And if you act right now, you'll also learn sound effects. And impressions.
Andy!
So what are you waiting for? Join us today and your broadcasting career will be over tomorrow. The Parviz Vitali School of Broadcasting. Not associated with any real broadcasting school.
It was George the Mailman's last day on the job after 35 years of carrying mail through all kinds of weather to the same neighborhood. When he arrived at the first house on his route, he was greeted by the whole family there, who roundly and soundly congratulated him and sent him on his way with a tidy gift envelope. At the second house, they presented him with a box of fine cigars. The folks at the third house handed him a selection of terrific fishing lures. At the fourth house, he was met at the door by a strikingly beautiful woman in a revealing negligee. She took him by the hand, gently led him through the door, and led him up the stairs to the bedroom where she blew his mind with the most passionate love he had ever experienced. When he'd had enough, they went downstairs where she fixed him a giant breakfast: eggs, potatoes, ham, sausage, blueberry waffles, and fresh squeezed orange juice. When he was truly satisfied, she poured him a cup of steaming coffee. As she was pouring, he noticed a dollar bill sticking out from underneath the cup's edge. "All this was just too wonderful for words," he said. "But what's the dollar for?" "Well," she said, "last night I told my husband that today would be your last day and that we should do something special for you. I asked him what to give you. He said, 'Fuck him. Give him a dollar.' The breakfast was my idea."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easter, my friends! Son of Easter, welcome one, welcome all to yet another episode of the world-famous Schnauzer Logic. That's right, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. And my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, I'm your buddy, I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And you have tuned into, latched on, and otherwise managed to download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. And we have a great, great, huge, great show for you today. Just to let you know what's going to be going on, we're going to be doing our big Oscar wrap-up today. So, I won, babies. That's right, I came in with 13 big winners. Sean came in with 10, but he's not here, so I still won, but anyhow. Parviz, not so much. Let's see. Then we're going to be doing comedy. If you looked at the blog page, you noticed that the question of the week was, who is your comedy inspiration? Since this is a program that has an awful lot to do with comedy, we thought it'd be interesting to get a sense of who inspired each of us about comedy. And we've got some comments from other people as well. And part of that will be to have a conversation with a very good friend of mine who is a stand-up comedian who was last seen on the David Letterman Show, Jan Karam. Comedian Jan Karam is going to be with us today. We're going to be talking about the Barry Bonds scandal. For those of you in the United States, you know what's going on there with the whole steroids thing. With those outside the States, we'll fill you in. Plus, the usual assorted sundries. Plus, our good friend Parviz promises to have a dairy update. And let's turn his mic on right at this point and say, Sona Vista to Parviz Vitali.
Sona Vista, Robin.
We got a dairy update today, yeah?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, yes, yes. For all my fans out there that want to know what's going on in the
We're
dairy.
We're moving the yogurt, my friend.
We are funny moving, you should say that.
We are moving. Hey, I turned your mic off last week.
I know, which upset me. I don't understand. I don't understand why you turned off my mic. I was helping the Americans. I was helping the world, quite frankly.
I think the word stool is what did me in.
So we're going to ask you not to use that word today.
All right.
No, all right.
No S talk to it today.
No what talk?
S.
S. Oh, no S talk.
Yeah, that's how you spell stool, right?
Yeah. I thought you were saying no ass talk today, but with some kind of weird, you know, Parvizian accent.
Oh, I also have to say the beginning.
I didn't know that you had your own broadcasting school.
The beginning was absolutely hilarious. I'm hearing that for the first time.
What's his
and
nuts?
The loop is
what's
just
nuts.
It's too funny.
And
so that's what I sound like, huh?
Yeah,
I sound like a gnat.
A wren. You sound more like a wren. Those little birds that they're they hang out in the Target parking
Target.
Lot.
Target. It's funny they should hang out at Target, but not at Macy's or Nordstrom's or Safeway.
Are you saying it has something to do with their color?
No, I'm just saying maybe they go for
are
that
you, are
Target.
You, are you
that little
you
red white
some
thing?
Some kind of avian racist?
No, I'm a bird racist.
Okay. You may notice that the show has stepped down quite a number of degrees.
We're missing Sean, poor Sean.
That's what I was going to say there. Yeah. We've lost a massive number of IQ points. Sean is not here.
I'll take over the S.
Why? You'll take over the what?
The IQ points.
Oh, I thought you said you could take over the S. Didn't you just say I'm going to take over the S?
I was going to take over the assets.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
So, but Sean, we spoke to Sean right before the program.
Yes.
And he sounds like he's in fine fettle. Good spirits, yeah?
Yes.
So we're going to have him on as well. And you. So we invite you to, what?
And you.
Meaning the audience.
Oh, that's sweet.
And you. you're acting like this is the first time you've done this.
No, I'm acting like I'm surprised we have an audience. By the way, it's www.schnauzerlogic.com. Right?
Thank you.
SchnauzerLogic.com.
How much sugar did you have before the show today?
I had a Girl Scout cookie right before the show.
You didn't have one Girl Scout cookie.
No, I had a sleeve.
You had a sleeve of Girl Scout cookies.
I sure did. They're
those
delicious.
Girl Scouts have little cute little sleeves.
They do.
All right, we're 8
5 bucks a box.
We're 8 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic.
What a rip off.
It's Wednesday. It's March the 8th. I'm just going to ignore you. I'm just going to keep driving. Just going to pretend that you're not there. So, did you have a good weekend?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I can't remember right now. I'll get back to you on that.
No, but really.
I'm trying to think.
So, you're married now. How long have you been married?
A little while.
A year?
Not even that.
Not even a year.
Right.
You were married on 5/5/05.
Right.
I remember because you invited me to the wedding and I couldn't come because I had a brain tumor.
That's right.
How's that for an excuse?
Some people get a cold.
I fortunately had the x-rays to prove it. Otherwise, you weren't going to let me. So you've been married for almost a year.
Uh-huh.
You guys still fuck a lot?
Wow. Let's get to that dairy update.
No, I'm serious.
Well, yeah.
Get to define what a lot is. I'm not going to ask you how many times a week. Okay, how many times a week? No, but... But I mean, well, it's almost a year. So I mean, do you notice any kind of is there any kind of decline, any kind of lack of interest? I mean, you're a great couple, but I mean,
how
long can you keep banging your boots together?
Well, when you get tired of talking.
Is that
yeah,
it?
When there's no good shows on TV.
So it comes in third behind talking and TV.
Is and eating.
And eating. So it comes in fourth. So in
and
the
cheese.
And well, that's part of eating. So in the top three positions, we have eating, we have TV, and we have talking.
Talking.
We have talking, which beats out fucking. That's amazing. Now, was that like that when you were single?
No, because there was no TV time. There was no talking time. There was no eating time.
That's right. So, oh, really?
Oh, absolutely.
So because things changed.
Absolutely. What's the point when you go out? What is the point? You're going out for the prize, right? You're not going out to eat or to watch the movie. Nobody's watching the movie. Nobody's paying attention. Nobody's even paying attention to what you're eating. You hurry up. You pay anything for that food just to get to the prize.
And the prize would be?
Fucking.
Okay. Is it hard to you say that?
No.
You afraid your niece is going to be listening?
No, I'm just afraid that there's somebody out there in Norway that's probably, you know.
Oh, we got music today. I forgot to mention where the bands are going to be. We got music from Vancouver, British Columbia, and we've got some music today from Denmark, Los Angeles, Virginia, and if we have some time, we'll try to get to those guys in Modesto.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so.
I feel badly. And we didn't have a chance. You know, I'm a little bit off because Sean's not here, and so we forgot to say hi to Kippa Dada. And we forgot to say hi to Michael Zwirling, the owner of KSCO Radio.
Stroke or unload.
And, of course, we forgot to say hi to Dick Cheney. Uh-oh. I think he's getting better with that shotgun.
He is.
They're falling faster.
All right, I don't mean to embarrass you. Well, of course I do.
No,
I mean, I
no.
do mean to embarrass you, but...
It's embarrassing. It's not embarrassing.
Well, your wife doesn't listen to the podcast.
Yes, she does.
Does she?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so tell me about this. So have you noticed any... So what you're saying is that when you were single, pretty much going out was for the purpose of scoring. What?
Yeah.
Is it the wrong word?
No.
Hey, tell me, fella, how you doing out there with the ladies?
That's the right word. 40s. I guess scoring is the right word.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, you went out to find some pootie tang.
In a relationship and, you know, fun. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, the pootie tang is important.
I'm guessing yeah is part of the operative answer here.
Yeah, and that was pretty much our conversation.
And so how did you know that she was the one that you wanted to eat with? How did you want to move the relationship from fucking to eating? How did you know that that was what was going to happen in the relationship?
She doesn't bug me.
Is that it?
That's a huge part of it.
She doesn't bug you.
She doesn't bug me. As
now,
a matter of fact,
could she say the same about you?
Yeah,
you
I think so.
You don't think she bug? You don't think you bug her?
No. I think I bug you.
Yeah, you do. But that's all right, because we're not fucking.
That's true.
So it's we're not eating.
That's true.
And occasionally we watch television.
Actually, we just shared a cookie, though, about 30 minutes ago.
We didn't share a cookie, my friend. I had my cookie, you had your cookie. That's not sharing.
Whatever.
Okay, fine.
You ate on my sleeve.
We are 12 minutes into the very first hour of this week's episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. All right, here's what I think I want to do. What's so funny?
I'm just waiting for the gunshot when you say, here's what I think I'm going
to
do.
You laugh at the most inappropriate places. Okay, we need you to calm
all
down.
Right,
we
all
need
right,
to just
right.
like think happy thoughts and all calm right. down. All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break. We're a little out of order today because Sean is up at UCSF Hospital having a biopsy done, I guess, and he said he had a sandbag on his abdomen.
I think he just wants the Jell-O.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll take a break. We're going to get him on the phone during the break. And then when we come back, we'll talk to him about the Oscars and maybe talk to him about some comedy as well. Or how does that sound to you?
Good.
All right. So in order to do that, we should be playing some background music here. See, I'm a little off today. It'll be all right, though. All right. Who should we play here?
Play somebody with a funny title.
Well, they're all about the same.
They're nothing funny?
No, not really.
What are the titles? Just give me the titles of the songs.
Let's see. We've got Adrenaline Drive.
Okay.
We've got I Hate All the Things You Love.
Okay, that's pretty funny.
All right. We got Last Salutation.
Okay.
We got Believe. We got Roland. And we got Bad Habit.
All right. The one about the I Hate Everything About What
I Hate
You Say.
I Hate All the Things You Love.
Whoever they are, let's play them.
Those are the Pin Boys. And they're from Aarhus, Denmark.
Perfect.
All right, baby. We're going with the Pin Boys number one. Chosen by your friend... And mine, Parviz Vitali. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Meehan will be with us when we get back on the other side. And you, who we are asking to please stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic. Take out.
We feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Crystal!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 18 minutes into this hour of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast for a Wednesday. It is the 8th of March. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, buddy, and pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian, lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. That's the website. robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That's the email address. Also, we've got some space over on myspace.com. It's myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. So that's what we got going on. Those guys rocked, didn't they?
That was a good intro song.
That was outstanding.
Excellent.
Good pick there, my friend.
Thank you.
And
I hope they appreciate it.
They do.
Good.
They're our friends. They're our allies. They don't publish photographs of, do they?
I don't think they do.
You just made the sound. You just made the Ren sound, dude. I'm going to call you on it every time. All right. Enough of this tomfoolery. Let's plunk down the phone line and see what we got on the line there. Son of Easter, my friend.
Son of Easter, Robin.
There he is.
Son of Easter, Sean.
Boy, boy. Flavor Flav.
Are you watching that Flavor Flav show?
No.
All right.
It's Sean P. Diddy Muffin Man. How are you, dude?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you guys?
All things considered, we're not up in the hospital with a weight on our belly.
No, but you know, maybe you should be because it's underrated.
So we won't go into your medical history because, quite frankly, it bores the shit out of us. But let everybody know that you're doing okay.
I am doing just great.
How's the Jell-O?
You know, I haven't really had an opportunity to sample the flavors here. I think they've got a fabulous apricot, and it looks like maybe a melon, too. So,
well, you know, if it looks like a melon. Wait a second. Okay, no more tumor humor. Tumor humor! Wait a second.
You got a rim shot?
I don't have I need a rim shot. I got this instead.
What?
That's okay. And I got a gunshot. It's almost a rim shot.
Wait for it.
All right. So you'll be back next week, hopefully?
Oh, yeah.
Outstanding. Well, let's talk about the Oscars. That's what we got you on the phone here. How much of the Oscars did you have a chance to see?
I didn't watch the Oscars, but I've been apprised of the results.
Okay. So you didn't see the Oscars. And Parviz, how about you? You saw all of the Oscars?
On and off. On and off. It quite bored me.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I'm the only one. I started at 3 in the afternoon. I watched all the pregame action on... I went back and forth between E! Television, where they had Ryan Seacrest... What the hell was that? Calling a code boot, dude?
Equipment that determines whether I need paddles or not. You know, just the regular beeping of the defibrillator.
Listen, would it be funny if that equipment determines whether we're funny or not?
I don't know if it would be funny if it determined that. Listen, I want you to know that Parviz and I are only about an hour and 10 minutes away. So if you need anything, if anything goes on, you just let us know, dude. We will be there in 70 minutes.
After the show.
More or less.
Right.
Okay.
You might have to stop for a meal or...
No.
It'll be just a drive-through.
We go straight through. We go straight through. You know, obey the traffic signals and all that. So apparently I'm the only one. I'm the only one who watched the entire show from start to finish, including Joan Rivers and Melissa Rivers and Johnny Rivers and Old Man Rivers. And then I watched the program, and then I watched the after thing when they were interviewing people. And I have to tell you, after the Oscars, when they're sort of standing on the red carpet as people are going to the governor's ball, that's when you really get people. I mean, for example, Ang Lee won the Best Director for Brokeback Mountain. Have you guys seen that, by the way? Either of you seen it?
No.
All right, I have. I have seen a bootleg copy of the screener that they sent out to Academy members. So we can talk about the film a little bit. But what was so interesting from my point of view is, you know, Ang Lee has been so gracious and about everything, and he thanked his fellow countrymen and China and everything of that nature. But when they got him, when it was clear, that was before the, you know, when he won the Best Director Award, but they still hadn't found out whether he was going to win Best Picture. afterwards, when he lost Best Picture to Crash, he was being interviewed on the red carpet by E! Outside the Governor's Ball. And let me tell you, he was one pissed off Asian director.
Really?
He was not happy. Yeah. And for the first few days, he was kind of kept his cool about it. But I saw in the paper today that he said that he didn't understand it. His position was, well, we've been winning all the awards. I don't understand why we didn't win the big one.
Wow.
Now, what do you think of that? John?
I don't know. I know that the Colts this year had one of the best regular seasons ever in the NFL, and I think that they were robbed that they didn't win the Super Bowl. They didn't even get there. So, I feel his pain.
It was funny to see him. All right, so let's just talk about the Oscars just a little bit here. In the pool that we had going on here, yours truly came in first. I had 13 wins.
Wow.
But I have to be honest, and I copped to this on the website, I watched the BAFTA Awards a couple of weeks ago. And so any of these nominations that I didn't know anything about, like Best Foreign Short Animated Feature with a Midget, for example, or Best Sound Mixing While Eating Cheetos and Picking Your Nose, when I didn't know what the answers to those would be or I had never heard the films, I just went on whatever the BAFTAs were.
That's not a bad idea. I did not have such a heads up, but I'm not sure that would have really helped me.
Well, here's what's interesting. You came in second. You got 10 right. I got 13 right, but a lot of mine were kind of small. You came in second, but what you got, Crash. You got the Best Picture, dude. So major props to you, my friend. We're giving you a heads up here. You picked it. And, of course, now there's all this it's funny. I don't know whether this is true in other countries of the world, but in the United States, revisionist history is considered the norm. After something has happened, I think people just assume that the history will be rewritten. Well, they say history is written by the winners.
That is the phrase.
History is written by the winners. The revisionist history now is that, well, we didn't really expect Brokeback Mountain to win. We knew that, even a week earlier that there was all this scuttlebutt, that Crash was coming on strong. What's your thought about this, Sean?
Well, that's what I picked up on. I noticed that wherever I turned the week before we did that podcast, our predictive podcast, every time I was on a website, there would be a little ad for Crash. Every time I looked on the cover of a tabloid or something, there was something to do with Crash, very little to do with Brokeback. And I kind of thought it had the momentum, even though Brokeback had the awards and therefore should have won more awards.
They're sending you Morse code now.
Yeah. Well, I'm not paying attention.
All right. But if that submarine needs to surface, you go and do whatever you have to do.
We'll
okay?
blow all tanks.
Okay. Now, did you see Crash?
I did not see Crash. I didn't even know what it was about, and I'm still not sure I do. But I felt that energy. I felt that it was coming on hard in that final stretch.
Like a crash.
It came through.
And I think that, there's a lot of talk now, I'm sure you guys have heard it, about the homophobia of Hollywood, which I think is kind of preposterous. But there may be a certain discomfort level in Academy voters. One of the things that, I'll return to from last week that people don't realize is Hollywood probably is not homophobic, but this is a conservative slice of elderly Hollywood, and they may be a little uncomfortable.
Like the self-hating Jews.
Exactly.
All right, I understand that. Well, but it's funny that they would have given it to, assuming that you're right, what I don't understand is why they went for Crash instead of something like Capote or Good Night and Good Luck, which is a more standard biopic, the kind of thing that you could imagine them giving an award to.
Well, there is one other thing that I had heard that may have made the difference, and that is the campaign for Crash was by far the best funded and the most involved in getting Crash in front of voters.
Well, it worked.
Yeah.
All right. The best actor, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Sean, you and I picked that.
Right.
Parviz picked Joaquin Phoenix, who looked very pissed. Did you notice?
Pissed, I don't know, but I was very happy that Reese acknowledged him, because he's a great guy.
Best actress was Reese Witherspoon. You call that Parviz. Very good there. The best supporting actor was Clooney for Syriana. I don't know if you saw it, I thought what he did was terrific. He got up, it was the first award that was given, and he stood up, with his big George Clooney. He's a movie star.
Oh, isn't he?
Oh, man, is he ever. He is a movie star by definition. And he walked to the microphone in his very Clark Gable-ish kind of way and said, well, I guess this means I won't be getting the best director or best screenplay tonight. That was just so perfect. Best Supporting Actress, Rachel Weisz. Sean, once again, you called it, dude.
Yeah, they like her.
They do. They really, really like her.
They really, really like her.
Best Director, Ang Lee. Yeah,
I missed that one.
Parviz and I got that. Well, you went for Clooney, but Clooney got the Supporting Actor.
Right.
Best Foreign Film, Robbie got for Tsotsi, which apparently is based on an Ethel Fugard play. That should have told me something had I actually seen it. March of the Penguins was the Best Documentary Feature.
I bet we all nailed that one.
And no, you went with Murderball.
Oh, I did. Wow.
Yeah, we all nailed that, dude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. Let's see. None of us got the Best Documentary Short Subject. Adapted Screenplay, we all got that. That's when we all nailed it. We all went with Brokeback Mountain. Best Original Screenplay, Parviz at Crash. Very good. Sean said Syriana. Robin said The Squid and the Whale. Best Animated Feature, Robin got that with Wallace and Gromit. I highly recommend that. It's a terrific clay animation, so not very old school. Sean and Parviz got The Moon and the Sun for the Best Animated Short Film. Best Live Animated, well, nobody cares about the rest of this crap. This is all, I'm already bored with myself, so there you go. So congratulations to all of us, and since I get to choose what the prizes are, there's no prize for me. I'm not worthy. Now, you didn't see Jon Stewart. What was? But I did see it. So Parviz saw some of the Oscars. What do you think of Jon?
I was a little disappointed in Jon.
Why is that? Because that's sort of the rumor that's going around. That's not the right word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. He didn't seem as on fire as he normally does on The Daily Show.
Right.
He didn't seem comfortable. He didn't seem...
I think that's fair.
Yeah. But I was impressed with how much comedy they were trying to put in the show.
Yes.
With Ben Stiller, with Will Ferrell and Steve Carell. And then they did a spoof. I forgot what the spoof was. They did a spoof about, you remember when they had like the public service announcements and it had like Reese Witherspoon
or
whatever?
Yeah, they did the campaigns about how the negative campaigning for the Oscars.
Right.
And that was brilliant.
Yeah, so I thought they were steering the show into comedy, which was great. And there was a part I thought where George Clooney accepted an award later on in the night. I heard it. I didn't see where he told the audience sit down and he's getting kind of cocky, wasn't he?
No.
There wasn't that part.
That wasn't, no, I don't know what you're thinking about.
All right. Well,
you just made the sound again, by the way.
All right. Okay.
Listen, I'm willing to take an entire podcast to get you out of a bad habit on the radio.
All right.
All right, whatever it takes.
All right, I'm concentrating really hard.
I know you are.
Sean, have you noticed that about me?
We're going to work on that next week.
I speak no evil.
All right. And what was it? All right, I heard that one. The show was okay. What was up with the band cutting off the acceptance speeches?
Well, they didn't. What happened this year was they started playing at the very beginning of the speech. This was something new that Gil Cates had tried. Had you heard about this, Sean?
No, but is this some new scheme to shorten speeches?
What a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, it was horrible because it sounded like the band was starting to play them off at the very, very beginning. As a result, the show, I think, probably ran a lot closer to time than it normally does, but it was devoid of any kind of soulful meandering. The best thing is to watch these actresses just kind of go on and on. Initially, it's cute, then it's funny, then it's painful, and then it becomes funny again. You got to let them keep talking to the point it becomes funny on the other side.
I think you're right.
They got to whip around.
The gentleman who won for the South African movie, was it?
Yeah, Tsotsi.
He seemed the most sincere.
Yes.
That he really appreciated the award.
Yeah.
He seemed great. I don't know. I know nothing about the man, but he seemed very sincere.
Well, I thought you were right about your take on Jon Stewart. As you guys know, a huge Daily Show fan, huge Jon Stewart fan. It seemed to me that he was very ill at ease in the beginning. I think he felt constricted. And also, we were talking to some folks. It's very different doing a television program in a small studio with, 100 people who you know are your friends. I mean, the people who go to the Daily Show tapings all love Jon Stewart and the Daily Show. That's very different than being in the front of, what is it, probably 5,000-10,000 people in the auditorium there, Kodak Theater. It's a huge venue.
Yeah.
And to know that there are going to be millions of people watching as well is a very, very different thing. Now, what is interesting is during the show, I think once he got into the improvisation, he started to pick up some energy and some steam, and he was really terrific. And my feeling is, if Gil Cates is smart, he would hire him to be the host for next year's Oscars now. He'd lock him in now, get rid of all the nerves, because what happens is otherwise every year you're training somebody new. They never pick up any kind of momentum.
You're right.
Yeah.
And what I heard was that he picked up momentum as the show went on, which is a very similar observation to the one you just made.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely would go with him for a second year.
I think that's the thing to do.
And there was no embarrassment. I mean,
no.
If there was disappointment, it was certainly not, there was no tragedy. There was no Uma Oprah.
No, and the expectations are set so high for this poor bastard. And when you, at the end of the day, they were films that were not particularly funny. I mean, they were kind of, so I'll just wrap this up here. I did have, have a chance to see Brokeback Mountain on the other night on a screener. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what all the brouhaha is all about. It was an okay film. It's beautiful to look at. I mean, the
cinematography.
Well, and the locations and what have you. And I think Ang Lee is technically a very adept director. So the shots are very, very powerful to look at. It is just a profoundly sad story, though.
Well, I'm not sure if we were on the podcast or if it was a post-podcast conversation, but we were talking about whether we would see Brokeback Mountain, and your concern was that I don't know if I want to get that bummed out.
Yeah, well, I think it was a reasonable concern. I don't think I got that bummed out. I mean, it's a sad film, and part of what I think is why I'm not raving about it, because I can be okay with sad films, is that the
Oh, that's okay. Everything's good. I'm back.
They're bringing you the good stuff?
That was just my doctor making sure that there was nothing gushing out of the hole that she made in my abdomen.
Dude, you're getting first-class medical care.
Oh, absolutely. They check on you here after they cut into you. They just don't leave you in the, like on a gurney in a hallway on some unfamiliar floor.
Oh, I've had that happen.
You get a room, and, you know, you get hooked up to stuff.
A room and a bandage.
Yeah.
Are the nurses hot?
Some of them.
Cool.
So it was sad, but I imagine...
But there was no sense of motivation. I guess that's my point, which is you don't understand... I think we understand that the Jake Gyllenhaal character is probably gay before this other fellow gets up there.
Right.
I'm guessing he's bisexual. He seems to be polymorphously perverse, as Woody Allen once said. But I don't think that we know much about the sexuality of Keith Ledger's character. He's just a kind of a sad kid. He's an orphan and kind of a sad kid. And I don't want to say that it's a predatory kind of thing, but you don't really feel that these two guys bond over anything serious. It's just, it's a very weird, the motivation is kind of thin, and then it just becomes painful. I'm glad that I saw it. It was a fine bit of filmmaking, but I never would have considered that to be Best Picture had I seen it months and months ago. Capote, absolutely understood that. Good Night and Good Luck, sure, I understand that. Even Munich, I understand that. There's something grand about those pictures, but not this one.
That's really interesting. I have heard of people in my personal circles making remarks like that, but I have not heard a single person in the media say that.
Well, we're in the media.
Well, the
a little bit.
The official, should I say, the official film reviewing critical media.
Okay.
You know, I haven't heard an actual professional film critic say anything but how wonderful it is.
Well, they're not always right.
No, they aren't. And I'm wondering if this is a case very much like... I don't know. There was a number of years ago, I'm sure you recall, Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List got a great deal of attention and ultimately won a Best Picture Oscar. And I was very surprised at the time by how many people I knew said, you know, I'm not sure it's a very strong film, really. The Schindler character's very opaque. I don't know how well this really works. And... when I finally saw it, I felt the same way, and I wonder if it wasn't the subject matter.
Maybe.
That
Listen,
made
dude,
it so irresistible.
We're running out of space here, so hang on. We take a break. We'll come back on the other side. You're listening to Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, and Sean Mee, and this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Play a little music and be right back. Stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic. sometimes I cry. When birds don't shine, sunshine and tears don't feel right. When I see you cry, you don't like me. You don't like me. That's 'cause every time you try to tell me, every time you try, why'd you leave me in this time when I needed you? Drive out to the sunset looking, Elvis waits for you. Sometimes I drive past the 65, I'm barreling down the seaway, looking for the night. You don't like you, I don't like you. That's 'cause every time I try to tell you, every time I try.
Flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 42 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. My name is Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal. Harvey Spitali is here. Son of Easta,
Robin.
You're kind of a host buddy and pal too, aren't you?
Thank you.
I'm going to give you props.
Yeah. Raise the roof.
Woo, woo. On the phone with us is Sean Meehan, who's also a host buddy and pal.
Son of Easta all.
Sorry. I know that you can't hear the music when we're going out, so you didn't know that we were coming to the segment. So my apologies, my friend.
No problem.
All right. So I wanted to move into the next thing, which we're going to talk about comedy. So as you know, I've decided every week what we'll do is we'll put a question of the week on the website over at www.schnauzerlogic.com. When you go to the blog, you'll be able to see the question of the week, and then you can give us comments about it. So the question of the week this week was sort of fairly short, because we've been talking a lot about comedy, and the question was simply, who was your inspiration in comedy? Who inspired you to be a comedian? Who inspired you to be funny? Or when you were, you know, sort of young, who was the first person that you thought was funny? That was the question of the week. Now, what's interesting is we got a couple of comments from people here. I'll read them off. We got a comment from Lucienne, who wrote that Stephen Wright and Robin Williams were the first people that kind of inspired him to be funny or think about comedy, which was pretty interesting. Shecky wrote, I don't know if Shecky's his real name, Andy Kaufman. Now, that's a really bizarre way to start in comedy, to think about Andy Kaufman. That's sort of a very interesting kind of kid. And we got an email from Cyril, who wrote that when he was growing up, there weren't very many comedians that we would recognize, so he offers two, Jerome K. Jerome and Jaroslav Hasek. Are you familiar with those two guys, Sean?
No, I wonder if a third name on there might have been Yakov Smirnoff.
You know, it might have been in my country. So I did a little bit of research here, just so that Cyril would not be the smartest kid in the room here. Jerome K. Jerome stands for Jerome Kapla, Kap 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 K L A
K-L-A-P-K-A, Klapka. Jerome Cap Clap. Jerome K. Jerome, from 1859 to 1927, was an English author best known for humorous travelogue, Three Men in a Boat. So, oh, wait a second. We got stuff going on there.
I had my regular morning routine. I had,
paging Dr. Moe, Dr. Larry, Dr. Curly.
Probably changing his bedpan.
And Ass Effects and Synthroid.
Oh, I like Ass Effects. I think Hollywood can do some great things with Ass Effects now.
They already made a movie, Brokeback Mountain, right?
Yeah. That's right. Let's get spend a lot of money on that CGI for better Ass Effects.
I got a feeling, and I don't know why, this might be hitting the cutting room floor.
No, I don't think so. Not unless the whole show does. I am committed to doing this program with you or with you. Anyhow, Jerome K. Jerome, so...
I don't know what a generic might be.
A generic is usually a...
They're giving him generic pills.
Put the nurse on the phone. Put her on the phone.
She's writing in a very concentrated manner.
Is she hot? Is she hot? No. Okay, thanks.
Oh, great. I was using my imagination, dude.
Sean answered, not me. It's funny. Sean says, no. As if she can hear.
She might be able to hear. He's a respectful kind of guy. He's not just eating meals. All right. So that's who Jerome K. Jerome is. And he had
he was a comedian in the late
1800s. He wasn't a comedian. He was a humorist author. He wrote... Would you tell her that she's messing up the podcast? She's screwing me up here. I can hear her voice.
So who is this?
I don't really give a fuck. I don't care.
Who is this Bactra Bam?
I don't really care. I don't care. I've lost the will to live. Who is funny for you besides Don? Go ahead.
Oh, my God.
Talk
to
me. Okay, save us. Save the segment.
No, there's no saving. This is a beautiful segment. My whole life, I've loved comedians my whole life. So I don't have one specific person who I absolutely love. There's just a slew of comedians that I absolutely love.
Who's the first one you remember as a child?
I don't remember. As a child, there wasn't a comedian that I liked. I liked comedy. I enjoyed TV. I enjoyed comedy. But in my late teens, teens, I used to go to comedy clubs constantly, every single weekend.
Where? Here in
the
Bay
city,
Island?
Walnut Creek, in San Francisco, in San Jose. Remember the last laugh in San Jose?
No.
Okay.
Who did you see? Anybody we know?
No.
People breaking out?
Well, Patton Oswalt. He's on King of Queens.
I know Patton Oswalt very well. Is he a Bay Area comedian?
No. He's like LA comedian. But they would come up here to do comedy stuff. People like Wayne Cotter.
Oh, I remember Wayne Cotter.
Do you remember Wayne Cotter?
No.
Okay.
Black guy.
No. But he did have black curly hair.
Okay. That's what I meant.
Paul Provenza?
Sure. Paul Provenza. Of course.
Paul Provenza was
on Mad Fred About
Wolf.
You.
Fred huh? Wolf?
I know Fred Wolf.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know Fred Wolf. I've met Fred Wolf. Fred Wolf is Jan Karam's good friend.
Yeah. He's hilarious.
Who's going to be on the show with us today, by the way.
Franklin Ajay.
Yes.
Do you really know Franklin Ajay?
Yeah.
Black guy?
He was a black guy with curly hair, too.
Dennis Wolfman. Do you remember Dennis Wolfman?
I do. He passed away.
Yes, he did. Big bulgy eyes.
He was a school teacher before he became a comedian.
Rick Overton.
I know Rick Overton very well.
Yeah. Brian Regan.
I know Brian Regan very well. He's still around.
Okay. But those were the comedians that I remember.
Very interesting.
That I connected with them. I thought they were just absolutely hilarious. Now, when I got older, I started getting into the mid-80s to George Carlin.
Okay.
After he had his heart attack,
wow.
I found George Carlin extremely hilarious. But before his heart attack, he was a little bit too just weird for me. I didn't get it. But
so you're saying that he wasn't as funny as a heart attack?
But once he got his heart attack. Once he got his heart attack, I thought his humor was goofy and fun, and he like let loose. Really quickly, Brian Regan. Two of my one of my ultimate favorites growing up, Howie Mandel.
Okay.
Howie Mandel cracked me up to no end.
Really? With the whole thing with the glove,
with the
blowing
glove,
it up with his face?
With his improvising. He was, he co-hosted Regis and Kathy Lee.
Yes, I do know that.
When he co-hosted Regis and Kathy Lee, it was probably the funniest segments because he would just goof on these guests.
Right.
I must say, though, the Deal or No Deal thing.
Yeah,
he's not funny.
You just made the sound again.
Sorry. And right now, one of my favorite comedians, he's a club comedian. He's out there. His name is Pablo Francisco.
Oh, sure.
Pablo Francisco right now is probably one of my favorite club comedians.
Okay.
Who I've seen many times. And
now, when you were getting into comedy, when you first started doing stand-up comedy, did you think that you wanted to be these guys? Or
no.
Did you think, well, what did you think?
You know, honestly, I just went with my gut. I went with who I was, and I just went out there, and I just went with who I was. I wasn't thinking of anybody, or nobody really inspired me. I didn't watch a comedian and say, I want to do that. I mean, I didn't start doing comedy until I was 31.
Yeah, but 32. You were funny before then.
Okay, but I never stood on stage and to try to tell jokes.
It's a different thing. I agree.
And I did it for a solid 2 years, and I think I had, I would say, 20% of the shows were good. The other 80% were just tragedy. But the tragedy was funny, because that's what I loved about Johnny Carson. When a joke bombed, he just hung there.
It's true.
And it was the funniest part of the monologue.
There's
when
comedy
a joke
all
bombed.
Around us. How about you, Sean? Have you had a chance to think about it?
Oh, yeah. Johnny Carson was probably my first real comedy. I was a devotee of Carson in the monologue, precisely because so many of the jokes died. I loved the way he handled that. He, more than anyone I have ever seen, could work with a dying joke to turn it around. And I was very impressed by that at an early age. I thought that was like a miracle. You could make someone laugh with no material. I love that. And I'm kind of a Carlin pre-heart attack guy. And I was very influenced by SCTV, the television series.
Interesting.
Probably early Saturday Night Live.
Right. Wow.
Which now I find almost unwatchable.
Although there is some energy into it with the young guys who've been doing these little digital video films.
Yeah.
And they're putting some energy back into it.
Oh, I was thinking about early Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
When I return to it, I don't find it entertaining at all, and I wonder why I loved it so much.
Yeah. That's changed drastically. You know what I think is really fascinating is all three of us have Carlin on our list.
Really?
Yeah. I guess I'm the oldest one here by probably 7 or 8 years. For me, the first comedian that I ever bought a record album of, and I was probably 12 or 13, was Bill Cosby. And it was Why Is There Air? And for me, Cosby was the breakthrough. Because before that, you know, you'd watch television with your parents, or I'd watch the Ed Sullivan Show with my grandmother, and it would be the old Borscht Belt comedians who would be, you know, they'd come out, they would go on the Ed Sullivan Show in a tuxedo. When they would do comedy, they would walk out into the center of the stage with a tuxedo, and they would do shtick. And they were funny, you know, they would tell silly little jokes, Alan King and Buddy Hackett. But for me, it was Cosby with that kind of long, rambling story. He talks about being on Lombard Street in San Francisco and how he has this $20, $25 car, I guess, and it's got no brakes and he can't pull around. And that was brilliant. So Cosby introduced it to me. The next one would be David Steinberg.
Really?
Who was probably now best known as a director of television programs, probably directed, I'm guessing, I don't know, probably close to 1,000 sitcoms. David Steinberg had brilliant kind of cerebral comedy. He was very much like Woody Allen, but he was a little more accessible. He did his whole thing about Jezebel and the Bible with this wonderful Jewish Canadian accent. David Steinberg really turned me on. And then the other thing was, I don't know if you guys remember, but comedy albums used to be really big, like party albums. Alan Sherman. You guys remember Alan Sherman?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Hello Mother, Hello Father.
I totally forgot.
My Son
Alan
the Folk
Sherman.
Singer. And so those, for me, were the very first three albums. I had Bill Cosby. I had David Steinberg. I had Alan and Sherman. Actually, my dad had Alan Sherman. And that, for me, formed this kind of very twisted sense of comedy. Now, I was thinking about it today, about, you know, what sort of inspired me. Because I've always been funny. Not the class clown funny, but I've always had interesting observations. And this came back to me today. I completely forgot about this. And I'm gonna tell this as a little story here. The first time, you know, think back, when was the first time that you knew that you were funny? It's a tough question, right? Were you, Parviz, were you class clown?
Yes.
Okay, so when did you start cutting up in class?
Probably in junior high school.
Okay, and what was some kind of joke that you told, or you
Yeah, one time actually I got up in the middle of class and I imitated the teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, and I got a big laugh.
All right. You get detention for that?
I did, actually.
Excellent.
It was very rude what I did, and the teacher was pissed, but he challenged me.
Right.
And he said, oh, if you can do a better job, get up here and do it yourself.
And you did.
I did.
You took the chance.
And I did, and he was pissed.
And you got a big applause, which probably made him even pissed. How about you, Sean? Were you ever a class clown?
Never really a class clown. I think in high school I started realizing that I enjoyed comedic situations and describing them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never really a public thing. It was just between friends. I didn't need that warmth of the crowd yet.
That's very interesting. Because both of you guys are talking about junior high school and high school. And I'm just thinking, it's kind of like I knew I was transgendered when I was about 4 or 5. I knew I was a comedian in first grade. In first grade in Brooklyn at PS 217, I was sitting in a first grade class. There were probably 30 of us in this classroom. And the teacher was trying to teach us about compasses and magnetism. And so she walked around the classroom and she gave everybody in the class a compass. These little rubber compasses that were like in a little truck tire. It was a little tin compass
and
a rubber.
Remember
those? A little rubber truck tire, a little tin compass? And she stood in the front of the room and she explained to the class that the blue arrow, the blue edge of the arrow pointed north and the silver edge of the arrow pointed south. And so she wanted everybody in the class to stand up and hold the compass out in front of them and everybody to point in the direction of the blue arrow. And everybody in the class stood up, and 30 arms went in 30 different directions. And I broke up. I could not stop laughing. And she threw me out of the room. She took me out of the room. I could not stop laughing. The absurdity of the situation. And how old are you when you're in first grade? Six?
Yeah.
Right? Six and a half? So as a six-year-old, I already appreciated the absurdity of the situation. And, of course, she had no way of coping with a six-year-old who was being kind of very still, a little Robert Benchley going on here, you know? And she threw me out of the class, and she threw me down to the detention. They sent me to the principal's office. Principal didn't know what the hell to do with me. It's like, what's so funny? What are you doing? I was like, all the kids pointing in different directions. So I knew at that point. Now, as I got to the age where you guys were thinking, because I wrote down sort of my second half, clearly Monty Python, George Carlin, Firesign Theater, Steve Martin, people when I got into high school and then into college who were breaking on the comedy scene who, again, weren't doing jokes, right? Carlin was not doing shtick. He was doing observational things.
Right.
Firesign Theater, very absurdist, surrealistic kind of radio drama, but really, really funny. Same thing with Monty Python. And later, of course, we've now found out, you know, the early Monty Python stuff, before they were Python, when they were doing At Last the 1949 Show and Do Not Adjust Your Television Set back in the UK. I mean, these guys have been working on this for a really long time. But that kind of absurdist point of view, I think that defines my sense of humor. Do I like a bad joke? Sure. Do I like a good joke? Sure. But absurdist comedy, that kind of mashing, right? It's a perceptual mashup, if you will, is what gets my sense of humor, and I think that's how I think. And I look at it as a kind of brain damage. When I come up with those images in my own head, I think to myself, some circuit breaker tripped there when it wasn't supposed to, when I made a joke as a result of that fact. I don't know what your experiences are with that.
I think that's very true. I think as I've gotten older, absurdist comedy has become more and more appealing to me. The less structure, the better. But I had a hard time with Monty Python when I was, say, an adolescent and you know, early college, that kind of period. I thought it was too silly and not funny. Now I find it much more appealing, but I didn't go for it then.
Yeah.
I think I needed more structure.
You needed a punchline.
Right. I needed to really understand what was funny about this in a very literalist kind of way.
Right. Well, there you go.
Any female comedians?
Jan Karam, I think, is just an absolutely fabulous female comedian.
She's going to be on the show, dude.
Oh my gosh, what great luck.
Maybe Jan Karam will mention the kids from Modesto that we're supposed to play.
Jan is funny. Any female comedians?
Janine Garofalo, I think, is hilarious.
She can be.
She can be hilarious. She's very subtle, and she's kind of pissed off all the time.
Yeah. I think Laura Nightlinger. when she was doing stand-up comedy, comedy was very funny. I was never a big Roseanne fan, but...
There was an old comedian, David Letterman days, Carol Leifer.
That's who I was thinking of,
no
Carol
way.
Leifer. Yeah, Carol Leifer.
She was hilarious.
Hilarious, very, very funny.
And I saw Ellen DeGeneres in the late 80s, back in those little clubs.
Very funny.
Back when she was straight.
And she was hilarious. Ellen DeGeneres...
She is still hilarious.
She still is hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's always been harder for women in comedy, though. The expectation is very, very different. You know, because of Jan, I've been down to Los Angeles a number of times and seen her women in comedy shows where she performs with a bunch of other women comedians. And even now, the expectation is very different. Women telling dick jokes is different than guys telling dick jokes.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing. The sexual tension changes the perception of the joke from the very, very beginning.
What's the name of the woman who was on that puppet show? The Greg the Bunny show.
Oh, Sarah Silverman.
Sarah Silverman. I like her.
Yeah, I do too. She actually hosted the Independent Spirit Awards the day before the Oscars and was brilliant. She's an absurdist comedian. She doesn't look like she's an absurdist, but she takes her jokes to the extreme and never cracks a smile.
It's incredible. The piece she did on the recent film, The Aristocrats, was hilarious and incredibly uncomfortable.
And she pissed off Joe Franklin. If you haven't seen the film, by the way, The Aristocrats, I think people may know. It's available now on DVD, and it's highly recommended. Not the kind of thing that you want to watch right before dinner. I know somebody that did. You know the story of The Aristocrats?
Yeah,
yeah.
I saw it.
The basic story is... this family walks into a talent agent's office and says, we're looking for representation. And the agent says, I don't book family acts. And the father says, we got an act you're not going to want to miss. He goes, all right, I'm going to give you a minute. And then what happens is the family begins to do the most disgusting, perverse, physically unbelievable things with each other, body fluids, pets. And the idea is that the comedian is supposed to riff during this time. So there is no structure to the center of the joke. Basically, you get to go off and do whatever you want. And then at the end of the joke, the talent agent is standing there and his mouth is agape and his eyes are bugged out. And he goes, Jesus, that's quite an act. What do you call yourself? And the father goes, The Aristocrats. And the film is a documentary by Paul Provenza, one of your
yeah.
guys, and Penn Jillette, the talking half of Penn and Teller. And it's really an exploration of why things are funny in that kind of way. So I don't know that I think of it as a comedy. It's more of a documentary. There are some funny tellings of the joke. There are some very clinical tellings of the joke. But the Sarah Silverman telling, as Sean has said, is so... mind-numbingly disgusting, and she does it in this innocent, unaware way that it just blows your mind.
Where you realize she's telling the story as though it's a real story, and she was victimized by it. it's incredibly disturbing, but it makes you uncomfortable at how funny you find it. You know, what kind of person am I to listen to this telling and think it's funny?
Well, listen, my friend, here's what we're going to do. We're going to let you go because I think you probably need to get a little bit of rest there.
No doubt.
And
Say hi to Jan for me.
We'll say hi to Jan for you. What we'll do is we'll take a break at this point. We'll come back on the other side with Jan. So,
bye, Sean.
Feel better. Son of Easter, my friend. Hopefully we'll have you in the studio next week, all right?
Sounds great.
Hey,
Son
next
of
week,
Easter, guys.
Next week is our Ides of March show. So let me tell you, Brute, you better be there.
I'll do my best.
All right. Take care, my friend.
You
I love
too.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So we'll take a break. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we've had two great songs so far.
Yeah, so
first
far.
Tunage from Denmark. Second tune, we didn't announce it. That was Kurt Borden. And from Kurt Bordian from Vancouver, British Columbia, and the song was Adrenaline Drive. I love that tune.
That was good. That was good.
An excellent tune.
Can I say something just off the wall here?
Can I stop you?
No. Did you hear that one guy died on the Jeffersons, the white guy that was married to Helen? Did you hear that?
Yes.
All right. Because I was thinking about comedy, and I was thinking, oh, that's right, that poor guy died.
They didn't give him any props, though, at the Oscars.
No, but I have an impression. No, I do not.
They didn't give any props to Don Knotts at the Oscars either.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Or Dennis Weaver.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of mean.
And what they were saying was, well, they didn't die this year. They died this year, but Chris Penn died this year, and they gave him a shout-out. I don't really think a death memorial thing is a shout-out. I guess it's... That's not really a shout-out, is
it? No, not really.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. All right, what are we going to play next? You've had a couple of good picks here. You got the list here. You don't want to go number six, but you want to go in any other ones.
No, I'm going to start with... we're going to do the
guys... You made the sound again.
Okay. Randy. Let's try Randy Coleman.
Randy Coleman from Los Angeles, California.
Oh, I hope he's listening.
The song is The Last Salutation.
I hope he's listening.
All right, when we come back, we'll be talking to Jan Karam.
Cool.
Or we'll pretend that we're talking to Jan Karam. One or the other. So guaranteed it's going to be funny. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Meehan, and you. Please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Another cause to make it go away. Another false alarm, and so you say. We walk the mile, and it was worth the while.
If you have not been fully oriented, you must file a complaint with personnel. File a faulty complaint, and they dock you.
Welcome back. We are 10 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 8th of March, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, buddy, and pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And sitting across from me is Parviz Vitali.
Son of Easter, Robin.
How you doing? You hanging in?
Oh, yeah.
All right. We got more comedy with the story of the day, or our theme of the day, the question of the day, if you will. Which you can find every week. We'll be posting the question of the week on the blog page. It is www.schnauzerlogic.com. Of course, you can always send us email as robin@schnauzerlogic.com. The question of this week was, who is your comedy inspiration? And I'm very, very fortunate, as Sean mentioned in the last segment, to have a friend of mine who is a professional stand-up comedian. But more importantly than that, she's just funny. A funny, funny person. She thinks funny thoughts. She says funny things. This is my good friend Jan Karam, and she did the Letterman show recently, and we have a little bit of audio from that, and we're going to play a little bit of that, and we'll get her on the line here. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I'm basically introducing David Letterman, who's going to be introducing Jan Karam.
Our next guest is a very funny woman. She will be performing December 5th through the 11th at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jan Karam. Jan.
Hi. Hi, how are you? Good. You know, people are friendlier in New York since 9/11. Before, I would go into a coffee shop 3 in the morning, ask the waitress, "How's the tuna melt?" She would go, "It's tuna." Now I go into a coffee shop 3 in the morning, ask the waitress, "How's the tuna melt?" She goes, "It's tuna." You see the difference? It's subtle, but refreshing. And then I was trying to relax. So I went to this aromatherapist. You know what aromatherapy is, right? They use essential oils to help calm your mind and soothe your body. Well, it's not covered under my health insurance plan, so I had to go to a low-cost aromatherapist. She wasn't very good. She used those Glade plug-ins. And that cardboard pine tree around my neck.
Ladies and gentlemen, keep it going for Jan Karam.
Hey. Oh. I think I was starting to hear a smattering of applause.
Only a smattering?
Well, I think you cut it off right at the
beginning. Oh, sorry. Well, that's just so there'll be no feedback when we're talking to you.
That's what we all hope for.
I can go back and play the applause for you later.
Hands together is what we're looking for. Hands off of the lap.
Okay. That's what
Parviz said. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Jan. How are you?
Are we live? Are we on the pod?
We are on the pod. Even as we speak, people are listening to the Schnauzer Logic podcast. It looks like we got somewhere between 200 and 300 listeners right now on a regular basis, so it's good times. I haven't seen you in about a year.
Yeah, but the bad news is these people are in prison. Hello.
So what's happened to
that's
you?
That's that laugh, huh?
The laugh doesn't change.
I know.
The laugh
Do your fans know about your laugh?
Do they know about the laugh? They've been listening for the last 6 weeks.
Laugh like that? I thought it was only me that tickled you that way.
Well, you tickle me on a regular basis that way, but occasionally Parviz will do something goofy and I'll laugh
Parviz
like that.
Parviz helps you get your car towed or something.
I got my car towed?
No, something about Parviz helping you thing. Are you?
Was this years ago?
Get Parviz?
Maybe. Did you go with me when I had my car towed?
Oh, yeah. After one of my performances, you got back and your car was gone.
And then I went down to Los Angeles like a week later to see Jan and my car got towed as well.
Right. It was where did your car get towed from?
It got towed from around the hotel on the edge of, right off of Santa Monica Boulevard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I said, this car, it tows like a dream.
That's funny.
The 2001 Saab. The 2001 Saab. It tows like a dream.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Jan, really quickly, I just want to
say,
hi, Jan. Yeah. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I just wanted to say, long before I ever met Robin, I knew about you, and I thought you were absolutely hilarious on Letterman.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks,
I totally remembered you because I just did. So.
Because what?
Because I just did. That's all I want to say. Because I just remembered you. You were there with Carol Leifer and some other female comedians that I always thought were very funny. And then when Robin said that you were hooking up with him and, you know, whatever, in L.A. and talking about comedy and
Wait,
you know, writing.
Wait, he's not using hookup like hookup.
I don't think
no,
so.
No, 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 no.
No,
like writing comedy or whatever. Uh-huh. But talking about you, I said, oh, Jan Karam. So anyways, it's nice to meet you. All
right. Yeah, right. Where he was, yeah, he helped me with my one woman show.
Okay, I'm uncomfortable now. The question of the day is who inspired you in terms of comedy? And I realize that that's something that you and I have never really talked about. We've talked about comedy now, but we haven't really talked about how we got started in this stuff. And when did you know that you were funny? Who did you listen to, if anyone? Who inspired you?
I didn't know I was going to be a comedian when I was a kid. I mean, you know, you're just trying to get through life.
So when did it all begin?
I mean, I didn't just go like, oh, who are, so I didn't have, not that I didn't have influences, I did, but I think I always made my mom laugh, so.
Did you listen to comedy when you were a kid?
Well, I mean, I watched television and stuff, but.
Nobody stands out.
Well, yeah, people stand out, but I'm withholding that information.
I see. That'll be for the pay-per-view special. If you want to know who Jan's comedian is.
Yeah. Well, no. Well,
$5.95.
You know, it's Jonathan Winters. My dad used to watch him all the time, and then so I would imitate him. But you know, and then that's like, oh, well, then you know, and Carol Burnett's show was on. And so it's old school.
Yeah, well, it is old school. I mean, we were talking, I think,
and
like...
Johnny Carson's.
Yeah.
We would watch him all the time.
That's what Sean said. I mean, I think a lot of it is old school. For me, you know, early Bill Cosby...
Mm-hmm.
Early David Steinberg, who I know you know very well, when he was doing stand-up comedian, a comedy about Jezebel, right? He had these funny, funny bits that he used to write and perform in that weird kind of way of his.
Right, but I didn't really know too much about stand-up comedy. I mean, I would watch him on television, but it's not like how some people say, I got all the Cosby albums and memorized them and mm-hmm. listened to them over and over. I mean, I knew about Richard Pryor and saw the movie when I was in college
right.
or something like that. But I wasn't one of those. I would listen to the albums.
So you were not sort of a comedy groupie who thought I can do this too?
No, no. It was more like I just needed an outlet so that I wouldn't go crazy.
Sure. No, I think that's...
My parents always watched sitcoms and my mom, she always had to go to... She couldn't go to sleep unless she watched something funny before going to sleep. Like, that's the last thing she had to see was a comedy.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So maybe just always having, that was the big thing, was to watch, you know. But it wasn't like that Woody Allen, Bill Cosby, memorizing Mort Saul's albums and all that stuff.
So that was not you?
No, no. Well, I didn't even know that they had those.
So you started performing. You said you performed for your folks. You made your mom laugh.
Yeah, my mom and dad. My family's pretty funny when they're not screaming. When they're not raging.
And so when did you think, well, maybe what I can do is perform? Was that when you were in college? Was it part of an acting program?
When I went to college, I was taking a you know, theater major, and every play I auditioned for, I came from a small town, so we only had pep rallies, and we could do acting stuff. But we didn't have a theater department. I never heard of a thespian before.
Right.
And so when I went to college, I was against all these people that had been to big schools and had been in plays before. So I auditioned. I never got any of the parts. And I always thought anyway they didn't get me. So I just said, well, I have to be in charge of my own life. And so that's when I started just writing and putting stand-up together.
And at that point, so now you're in college, you're probably early 20s, late teens, early 20s at this point.
Yeah, 17.
17, okay. At this point, are you now more aware of the comedy scene and who was around?
Then I went to, during the first summer I went to of college, I went to Washington, D.C., and I went to a comedy club called Garvin's.
Okay.
And then Rich Scheidner and some other people were there, and so then I said, oh, I want to start doing stand-up. And I also went to New York City and saw First Amendment Improv Group, and Bruce Willis was in the audience. He was a member, but he wasn't performing that night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met him, and he wanted to take me home and make an omelet for me.
Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
Why do you sound surprised?
Huh?
All right.
And
you don't think he eats omelets?
I never got the omelet, let's just say that. Mm. But I did get some eggs. No, just kidding. Yeah. But so that was like my big thing out on the town. And then when I got back, then I started doing stand-up in Scottsdale and at a Mexican food restaurant. And I got paid one chimichanga.
Is that right?
Per show.
Oh, okay. So you basically got comedy on a diet there.
Yeah.
And so now you're
got funny and fat. I got a panza.
So now you're doing comedy at this point. So now you have a sense. You've seen the stand-up comedian in Washington. You've sort of seen some, I'm guessing, some reasonably good improv in New York City. Mm-hmm. Now you've taken that back to Arizona, and you're putting it together, figuring out what your act is all about.
Yeah.
Do you watch other comedians at this point, or do you sort of stay away from them so that they don't pollute your own comedy?
Exactly. That was my excuse to keep me lazy.
I see.
To rationalize my laziness, but no, I guess I mean I would watch. I'd always watch comedy. I want to say, you know, like I said, Joan Rivers, Carol Burnett, but I didn't ever idolize anybody. Maybe I should have, but I mean, I'd watch and enjoy and be influenced and inspired by. But I never wanted to emulate anybody, and so yeah. Well, you know, I wouldn't watch other comedians as I was performing because I really didn't. You're so spongy at that.
Right.
During that time I don't want anybody to shape my development in a way that I couldn't get rid of it, you know?
And I think it's probably easier
fingerprints on the brain.
It's probably easier to become hacky, too, when you watch other people.
Yeah, bad habits and things you don't even realize that you're picking up.
Right.
Yeah, intonations that aren't yours. I just wanted it to be my own thing, and that through just getting up on stage, I developed my own.
Authentic.
Yeah, style. And then I heard a few years later, Dan Rather, when they said, oh, you're the number one newscaster. Do you watch other newscasters? And then he said, well, I've always said the thoroughbred runs with blinders on. So I'm not a thoroughbred, but you know. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's kind of how what my instincts were telling me.
Mm-hmm.
It was confirmed by somebody else who was really good.
Now, you've been doing stand-up, performing stand-up and a comedy actress, although you did Jan did an episode of ER this past season.
Yeah.
It was not funny, although I thought it was hysterically funny.
Yeah.
I liked the little bit of business that you did there.
I was screaming. They were holding. It took three cops to hold me down.
But have you noticed... not the business changing, because obviously the business changes as time goes by, and also as you get higher and higher. But have you noticed what people think are funny? I know that you're not trying to cater to that, but do you notice any kind of change in what is funny or what other people are doing when you go out and perform, or when you have friends who are comedians?
Yeah, it seems like it's the same thing that people start off where they're not going to pander to the mainstream or cater to it, not pander, but they're going to try to be more edgy and then give them new insights. But then they're up against the wall they're up against it where it doesn't really turn out that way. People do kind of want the same. I mean, the general population does want the same stuff that we've heard before.
Right.
That's kind of easy and accessible and low common denominator stuff, and not that intelligent stuff. And there aren't intelligent comedians, but I don't know. It just seems like you kind of end up having to cater to that kind of audience.
Now,
if you're going to work, say, on the road. You know, you can go to San Francisco or L.A. or New York and work in offbeat clubs somewhere.
Alternative comedy kind of places.
Pardon me?
Alternative comedy
venues.
Yeah,
alternative. Alternative to funny.
I see. So you're
but,
a big
I
fan
mean,
of alternative
know,
comedy.
In the end, you got to have a joke.
Right.
You know?
Right. And that's one of the things that you've always been so wonderful about. I mean, Jan is, I have weird thoughts. Jan has more than once taken sort of weird, absurdist thoughts that we've been talking about before you got on the line, and she's crafted them into jokes. She understands, as a writer, how to turn them into jokes, and I think that's the craft that goes along with the art, which you have in spades, but the craft is there as well, which I think is amazing. Do you find...
Thank you.
Well, no, I mean this sincerely. You know that. We talk ideas all the time, so.
Thank you for calling Movie Phone. Robin came up with a good, thank you for calling Movie Phone. Please say the name and the name of the movie that you would like to see. And so, or the name of the city.
Yeah.
You know, You say Los Angeles, California. Billings, Montana.
No,
is that
wait.
Correct?
Go
no
back.
Way.
Go back.
No way. Is that the name of the movie?
No way.
No way. Go back. No
playing
way.
At
You've
the.
You selected No Way. Go Back, starring Cedric the Entertainer. Would you like to buy tickets now? Sure. Honey, we're going to see No Way. Go Back, starring Cedric the Entertainer. It's in Billings, Montana.
And you said that bit got laughs.
It got you to laugh. You want to go? It's in Montana. Get ready. It's something like that.
Yeah.
I rushed through it. But isn't that funny, Parviso?
Yeah, it's very. I like that. That's cute. It's very funny. Jan, I wanted to ask you something really quick. What's the state of comedy right now? Is it hot or is it not?
I think it's all. Oh, shoot, somebody's calling me, but I'm not answering.
Of course,
it.
While I'm talking to you, somebody
calls. I know. What's the state? You know, I always sound like, I hate always like, well, when I was just starting out.
Well, it was
good.
Hot in the late 80s, right? And then it
yeah.
kind of took a downslope
it did. It
in the
completely.
90s.
Completely. And now it's hot again, it seems, but in a gluttonous, oversaturated kind of way.
Because it's always on TV, right?
Yeah, but I mean in a glutty, if that makes any sense, in a way that doesn't. It doesn't seem like, does anybody really stand out? It's
right.
Whoever's hot, but they're not doing anything. It doesn't seem like nobody's really changing the art, not even changing the art form, but, I mean, you know, they're not, it's not like something new. It's
right.
kind of like whoever's doing the best at being the same.
I mean, Dane winner. Cook is probably the biggest name right now.
He's the biggest name, biggest comedian, but he reminds me a lot of Brian Regan. His delivery, his...
And
his,
Regan never got that big.
No, but Dane Cook's a dirtier Brian Regan because Dane Cook would like take a joke and keep going with that same joke and add a different word here and there, just like Brian Regan.
But I think... I mean, I've listened to Dane Cook. I like Dane Cook. I think he makes me laugh, but I think that Dane Cook is a...
Wait, hold on 1 second. Can I call you back? I'm on Bean Podcast right now.
Hello, mommy.
She's talking to Sean.
Wait. Oh, my friend needs help getting to Pasadena. You guys are on the cell phone.
Do you want us to Google that for you?
Yeah. Can you Google
a little map quest?
Wait. Where are you right now?
Yeah.
Oh, he's north on Los Angeles Street, going to the 101.
We're 28 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic the podcast.
To the 110 to the 5. Or how about the 110 Pasadena?
Should we let you go?
No, don't go. Wait, don't hang up. Yeah, I have to go. I'm really on the air. Or I'm. Yeah, can you get to the 110 North, Pasadena?
I don't think so.
Oh, get off at Arroyo Parkway.
Oh, I've done that.
Oh, the 210?
You should make it to the other side of the conversation.
You guys know how to get to the 210 from the 101?
You go to the 105 and double it.
What about the 5? The 5 to the 2? Oh, you need to go to the 134.
You
got to
carry the 2.
Know.
It doesn't. I'm not so good with my Safran.
I don't know.
I don't do well with the Gazintas.
I have a chauffeur. I don't drive.
You're on the 101? I have to think about it. I'm on there. Honestly, I'm doing a radio interview or a podcast.
Apparently, they don't care.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's not nearly as...
I don't know. Honestly, I have to look it up.
I think it's Sean's nurse is calling.
Yeah.
Okay. He's going to call somebody else.
Who's not
that was immediate needs guy. he needs his needs met.
Is this somebody that you're dating?
Otherwise, he can't, you know.
Is this one of your current dating people?
No, just a friend.
Oh, okay.
But he's immediate needs.
So, but
can
we
you help me with the directions to get? No, all right. Well, go to hell. When are you going to call me again? When I need you.
But that's a relationship you can count on. Because, I mean, everybody always has needs.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's fairly stable, I think.
When are you going to call me again? When I'm hungry. All right. When I need food and shelter. Okay.
Well, it's so weird that
the
they...
The basic needs.
Couldn't they just get a GPS thing? One of the... Get an
oh,
OnStar.
No. Oh, how about the other one that we did together?
Oh, the OnStar.
Yeah. Because should I tell them that about
of
how
course.
You came to visit me?
Sure.
Do you know this one, Parvi?
No.
So, well, Robin came to visit me, and then everywhere we went, he kept on doing OnStar. And so I said, you know, I would say, he'd plug in the address and, you know, in the OnStar, and then I'd say, go straight, and the OnStar guy would go, make a left. And I, and so then Robin would make a left. And then I'd say, okay, go up here. We're going to, you know, turn right here at the next light. And then the OnStar guy goes, continue through the next intersection. And so Robin did. And I said, what do you keep on listening to OnStar for? I live here. OnStar doesn't know about the traffic on the freeway. And then the OnStar guy goes, OnStar doesn't have like a traffic on the freeway. So OnStar has a feature, or at least Robin has it, that mocks the passenger.
Well, this is the better OnStar. See, initially, I had a cheap one before I got the real one put in. I got like a cheap one at like one of these discount OnStar units put in, and it had a stuttering problem. So it go at next light, go straight.
No, it was indecisive.
It was afraid.
That sounded like a scared OnStar.
I found on the internet one day a blonde star. It was a spoof on that, and it had a blonde in the car. She's like, I'm stuck. I'm locked in my car with my keys. I don't know what to do. And the guy's like, well, just get out. I can't get out. My child's crying. What do I do? Hurry.
Oh,
thanks, Jan.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember Jan was the woman in the Seinfeld who wouldn't laugh at the jokes.
Oh, right. I said, that's funny.
That's funny.
Do they remember?
Of course I remember.
Do they? Do the people listen?
Of course they remember.
We tell them to write in right now or to blog or whatever you guys are.
That episode's now on DVD. Isn't that right?
I guess so.
That was the sixth season. It's now available on DVD.
Wow.
Jan Karam in the episode of Seinfeld known as The Switch.
I know.
I mean, like,
I said, that's funny.
I'm your own personal stalker.
Huh?
I'm your own personal stalker.
Yeah, so wait, Parviz was saying something.
Nothing amusing or intelligent.
No, the State of the Union. I hate Bush.
The State of Comedy.
State of Comedy Union.
So what are you doing to change this?
Well, there's nothing I can do. It's bigger than me. I'm just being funny. You know, well, now I'm writing a book I finished this book. But I'm just, that's what I was working on right now. All my short stories compiled into one
Oh, excellent.
Thing. And then,
be like the vagina monologues of comedy.
Hey!
What?
The vagina. The vagina.
I said the vagina monologues. I went through the word vagina very quickly and got to monologues.
That word should never be used in any sentence.
Vagina?
Yeah.
Okay, does it make you cringe?
It's I don't know, it's a funny word.
Okay.
Try stool.
All right. Anyway, so go ahead.
So, you're going to publish a book of your funny short stories.
Yeah, but it's a bunch of short stories that I've read at Sit and Spin in Los Angeles at Hudson Theater. And then also I've done a lot of the pieces are from my one-woman show called Reclining Nude on La Cienega.
Oh, wonderful.
That Robin helped me with.
Are you any plans to stage that in the near future?
No.
Okay.
I'd like to, though.
We should find some funding for it and get it staged.
Funding. Please send your funding to moviephone.com.
Okay. Wow.
Okay, go ahead.
No.
Jan, what's your website?
Oh, yeah. You know, I haven't updated it in like a year. I'm really bad. It's jankaram.com, JANKARAM.com. But a couple of the short stories are on there.
That's right.
But there's nothing on there that's new because I haven't been going on the road because I've just been working on my book.
Well, you've been busy.
I'm very busy.
You're looking for another venue.
Yeah, you know, I get kind of tired of going on the road sometimes. It's a little bit...
I went on the road with her once.
I know. We went to the Alaska Pipeline.
We went to Fairbanks, Alaska in February for 4 nights.
And his car got towed.
And any... by a moose. And any thought that I had ever entertained about doing stand-up professionally...
Yeah.
All of those hopes and dreams were smashed...
Mattered.
They were smashed across splattered across the Alaska landscape by watching it all the bullshit you had to put up with people that liked you.
Like what happened?
Drunks in the clubs and the
canceled gigs.
The crappy opening acts.
Yeah.
All Jan, the hacky stuff.
Jan, do you get hit on a lot at clubs?
Sure. No, I don't know.
With all the drunks, do they think that they can...
Well, you know, I don't...
Sure,
well, thanks
does.
A lot. That's a nice to assume that. But
Because I do.
No. But guys are dogs, right? That's what you're saying. It doesn't matter what you
guys are cocky when they're drunk, huh?
They what?
They're cocky when they're drunk.
Yeah, sometimes they'll yell at me on stage, and they wouldn't yell at a guy or something, you know? Like, they might yell something out. But you know what? I got the microphone and the light, and so I usually can kind of come up with something that shuts them up. So that's kind of good, because they think that they're going to... Yeah, and I can't think of anything. When people say, what's your best heckle line? I can never remember, because it's, I don't know.
Well, you're just in the moment, though. You do a great job.
Yeah.
Well, listen, want to thank you so very much for being my first famous guest on Schnauzer Logic.
Oh, thank you.
You're not the first. The first was John DeCoven of Win John DeCoven's Money, but you raised the whole podcast to another level.
Wow. Thank you, Robin.
We could ask you to Win John DeCoven questions, but I think we're out of time.
Aw.
All right.
I was all ready for him. Well, let me know.
Thank you, my friend.
Because I do have my lifeline.
We'll
hey,
let you...
Parviz, it was nice meeting you.
It was nice to talk to you, too, Jan. And, Jan, in the future, if anybody ever asks you who's your inspiration, just say Parviz. And
okay.
Trust me, they've never heard the name before, so they'll think it's somebody very important, okay?
Okay, yeah. Just well, ever... you are important.
Well, I appreciate that. But if they, just say Parviz, and they'll think, oh, okay. They'll act like they know me, but they won't.
Okay.
Thank you, Jan.
But then one day when they meet you, they'll say, I know you.
They're like, you were the inspiration?
Yeah,
say,
right.
Yeah, that was me.
Of that girl that we don't know? Okay.
Oh, they do know you. We'll put a link on the website to your website, so that'll encourage you to update that.
I don't know how to update it.
Well, talk to George.
Okay. Grubbs oldplaystream.com.
To somebody else?
Yeah.
So now...
For a Brazilian dollars.
That's a joke. All right,
okay.
My friend. Thank you so very much. You were so sweet for joining us at the last minute.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks for sharing your thoughts
bye,
on comedy.
Bye, Parviz.
Love you.
Love you, too. I'll see you soon.
Okie dokie.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right, there you go.
She's so cool.
She's terrific. We love her.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a break, play some tunage. We'll come back. We'll do a little Barry Bonds, and we'll get out of this place. All right?
Sounds good.
All right. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic with Robin Goldstein and Parviz Vitali, inviting you to once again, please stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Why were we born to be laughing and crying in times like these? No regrets. The world can disappear into nothing. We're life. Is a mystery. Only the truth can set you free. But you wanna play both sides now. Wanna be a god, but you don't know how. How? Well, I don't wanna be you. And live with the consequences like you do. Well, I don't. Sound, but does anyone ever stop to have a listen? Oh, you try to make me understand. We're all part of a master plan, but does anyone know how it ends? Wanna be in God, but you can't comprehend. No. Well, I don't wanna be you. Live with the concept. Like you do, and I don't wanna.
consequences like you do. Well, I don't wanna be you. I don't wanna be. I wanted to believe in something. Believe in something more.
100% uninterrupted direct digital feed straight from the pleasure zones of your brain.
What the hell is this?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are we're just way long into the this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 8th of March, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein, and we invite you to check out the blog page at www.schnauzerlogic.com. Send us email. It is robin@schnauzerlogic.com. We also invite you to join us over in MySpace. It's myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. Parvis was asking me during the little break there. He said, what do you think the question of the week is going to be next week? And I said, the question of the week should be, should we keep doing this podcast? I just, you know, it was funny. And I know that sometimes I come off as a gloomy Gus, and I don't mean to do that. I have in my head, I think every week in my head, I have a model for what the show is supposed to sound like, this kind of audio model, like a puzzle. And my job is to get the show to actually match the model. And if it doesn't match the model, then I get very, very unhappy. I get depressed. I'm very disappointed with myself.
You're very hard on yourself.
I'm very hard on myself. Now, what I realize is whether or not the show matches the model that I had for the show has no connection to whether the show is a good, entertaining show. The two are not related to each other at all. It's only related to how much of a fucking control freak I am to make the show force it into the form that I think it needs to. It's supposed to be in, but it has nothing to do with the quality of the show. So the fact that we ran long today, so we're having a good time.
Yeah,
it's interesting stuff. I want to move on to the last thing because we are running a little bit long today, and I want to make sure that we finish up on time. Barry Bonds,
idiot.
Okay, so I think people probably know the big story came out in Sports Illustrated and San Francisco Chronicle. Lots of accusations over the last few years that Barry Bonds has been involved in steroids, along with Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro, all of those guys. Bonds, of course, vehemently denied it. And unlike a lot of those guys, Bonds is not beloved by the sporting press. He's kind of a hard ass. Now, of course, we know why his ass is so hard. But before that, he's kind of a hard ass. And so I think they've been looking to get him. And a couple of writers from the San Francisco Chronicle have been following the Balco case and the grand jury testimony. And they've written a book in which they really kind of expose not only did Bonds take knowingly, in the book they claim, not only did he knowingly take steroids, but that he was very clear about what he was doing and that he's been lying all along about this. And they go into his personal life with his mistress and how he was signing balls for money and then not reporting the income, which I think is really interesting. For those of you who are listening, that's, I think, the little part of the story that's not getting reported. But I've read all of the published excerpts so far, and one of the things they talk about is how all of his money was being... He had a mistress. He was married once. He had a mistress at the same time. And he was going to buy his mistress a condo, I think, in Arizona so she could be there for training. And one of the things that they say in the article, which is a part of the book, is that because all of his money was routed through his business managers and his accountants, he couldn't funnel off any money. Mm-hmm. So what he did was he took money that he got from signing memorabilia, balls and bats and gloves and things of that nature, which was unreported income, and he gave it to her, $80,000 or such, for down payment on a condo. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, wait a second.
Are they setting this guy up here for a fall with the IRS? It smells that way. So you guys heard it here first on Schnauzer Logic on the 8th of March in 2006 that not only is Barry going to have problems with Major League Baseball, whether or not they decide to pick up the cause or not, but I bet he winds up having some problems with the IRS. Now, other than your initial reaction here, what have you thought about this whole thing?
Well, it's interesting. I do believe, I can't imagine if you're going to do steroids at any point in your life that it's not going to come back and bite you in the butt. So it's interesting to me that he could continuously do steroids and believe that nobody would find out. That's the first thing interesting. But the other thing...
Well, he's a superstar. He's above the game. He's above the rules. They don't apply to him. Look at the current situation in Washington. The president, who is a superstar, believes that the rules do not apply to him. I think that's...
That's another thing. The president, when they had the videotape of him knowing about the levees breaking... And
right.
Like, are you serious? You knew you're being videotaped.
Right.
That could come out at some point.
Rules don't apply to powerful people.
So.
Believe that they can... You know, Steve Jobs, they always talk about how when he makes a product announcement, it's a reality distortion field. And that's become very well known in technology, that Steve carries this reality distortion field around him. It's a funny way of putting it, but I think that's true about anyone who is incredibly powerful and famous. Mm-hmm. They carry a reality distortion field, and after a while, I think they may start to believe it themselves.
Now, he's using steroids to bulk up and to get big and have small testicles, but he is talented because it's a hand-eye coordination sport.
No doubt.
So whether he's bulked up or not, he's still hitting the ball. So there is talent there.
Sure.
But what bothers me is that he thinks he's Superman. He can't be touched. And these guys, you're right, these guys in the Chronicle, they are after him because they like to taunt him and they like to see him get all fired up. And I think last year he was so pissed at the press. And then he threatened to quit baseball and now he's not sure. I bet you now he's definitely going to quit baseball.
Well, here's what's interesting. You know, I was a season ticket holder for the San Francisco Giants for the last 4 or 5 years. This year I haven't renewed my tickets yet. I still have a little bit of time, I think. But because of medical reasons and what have you, I figured maybe that wasn't the best way for me to be spending my money. The Giants keep track of who has and who has not renewed their season tickets. And so I actually got a phone call from Barry Bonds, I think about 3 weeks ago. Now, what's funny is I played this for Parviz earlier, and Parviz thought that I was doing a voice. He's like, this is too white. You need to sound more black when you do this voice. I go, no, dude, this is really Barry Bonds. So I have the recording here, and I'll play it for you guys now. This is Barry Bonds from a couple of weeks ago, sort of imploring me to come back to the Giants family.
First saved voice message.
Hi, this is Barry Bonds. I'm told that you have not confirmed your season tickets for the 2006 season. Your support as a season ticket holder means a lot to my teammates and me, as we all want to see you at the ballpark this year. I'm excited about spring training and this upcoming season. The San Francisco Giants fans are the greatest, and as a season ticket holder, you are part of the family. I am looking forward to seeing all of you at the ballpark in April.
End of message.
So that was Barry. And I was surprised to get that. It went into my voicemail. I didn't have a chance to listen to it. I missed the phone call, and I'm listening going, oh, my God, it's Barry Bonds. And I've written him a couple of fan letters. I thought maybe he was calling me to, hey, Robin, how would you like to be part of my training team, and,
right.
Bring a little of your schnauzer luck with you, that kind of thing there, And so... So I got that message. So that was pretty cool.
All right.
That was kind of cool. They're okay. Now, what happened was a couple of days ago, I got another message. I still haven't figured out whether I'm going to sign up. I think I may actually go with some other friends and sort of give my tickets up. But definitely a Giants fan, Barry or no Barry, season tickets or no season tickets. I'm there with supporting the team. But I got another voicemail message from Tim Worrell, who's a pitcher who had been at the Giants, left the Giants, came back again. Now, what happened, unfortunately, was I actually picked up the phone when Tim Worrell called, and so I don't have a recording of Tim Worrell's call. But what I do have is my recreation of what I kind of remember Tim Worrell saying when he called me. So I'm going to play that for you now as well.
First voice message.
Hi, this is Tim Worrell. I'm told that you have recently received a phone call from Barry Bonds asking why you have not confirmed your season tickets. On behalf of the San Francisco Giants team and management, I wanted to apologize for that call. Barry made it on his own, without authorization. Apparently, he broke into the office one night and started rummaging through all the files. We think he was looking for linseed oil, or maybe some arthritis cream. Whatever, I just wanted to assure you that Barry was acting on his own and does not speak for the San Francisco Giants. He's just one guy on a very large team, no more important than anyone else, just a man, getting old. And you take all the time you need to decide whether you're going to confirm your season tickets. Hell, it's just baseball. Grown men playing a kid's game. How important can that be with all that's going on in the world today? I mean, did you know Dick Cheney shot a man in the face? Oh, yeah. I got to go make a bunch more calls. Anyway, thank you very much for your time. Remember, Barry was acting alone. And go Giants.
End of message.
So Tim Worrell called, and it looks to me like the Giants are running as far away from Barry as they possibly can.
That's exactly what he said, I bet, huh?
Right? That was what he said, yeah.
Wow.
That was kind of a simulated recreation of the call from Tim Worrell.
I feel like I'm watching an episode of America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I was surprised because I figured the Giants would be standing behind it, but it sounds to me like they're going to kind of let Barry twist in the wind.
Wow.
All right. Well, listen, here's the deal. We got to get out of here.
All right. We got
to
go.
So we're going to have to go. First of all, I want to say thanks to Sean Meehan, who joined us from his hospital bed.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about being a trooper.
Honestly, I think he was getting a massage while we were talking to him. I don't think he was in the hospital because there's a lot of chitter chatter going on.
There was something going on.
Where's my money?
Chitter chatter. Jibba jabba.
Chitty chitty chain bang.
No, jibba jabba. That's what Mr. T used to say. What's all with this jibba jabba?
Is he dead?
Sean?
No, Mr. T.
No.
Okay.
No, he's not dead.
Should be.
All right. You have rules. We need to understand them sometime. Also, I want to say thanks to my good friend Nancy Nangeroni. She is the host of Gender Talk on WMBR in Boston and also available at www.gendertalk.com. I was a guest of hers this past Saturday, and she let me ramble on for about 15 minutes. And so if you're interested in issues regarding gender, not only transsexuality or transgenderism, but gender in general. There you go. Women, men, www.gendertalk.com. Listen to Nancy's show. It's a terrific show, 2 hours every week. So thank you very much, Nancy, for letting me have an opportunity to do that. And we didn't get to the guys from Modesto this week.
Oh,
nothing
yeah.
less. I had them logged in here. I was ready to go.
Oh, what happened?
Ran out of time. But we do have time for a dairy update.
Yes, right now in the dairy.
Yes, dairy. Yes. Go for it.
Okay,
dude.
Okay. Really quickly, we have a new juice. It's a banana and berry juice by Kearns.
Is that considered dairy?
Yeah, it's juice, cottage cheese, eggs, milk, and all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
So juice.
In one thing? Milk, cottage cheese, eggs, and juice in one?
Right behind the glass doors, the refrigerated glass doors, you got milk, you got juice, you got soy milk, you got goat milk.
I don't got goat milk.
Goat milk does not sell well at all.
And you stock it anyhow.
We do, because there's that one Indian guy that goes, where's the goat milk?
Couldn't you just send him to another store?
We could. Actually, we have a Rite Aid right next door to us, so everything goes to Rite Aid. People go, go to Rite Aid. So
what's this called now?
Kearns Berry and Banana Drink. It's the newest drink that's out there.
And have you tried it?
Absolutely not. I can't try everything. There's too many things to try.
No. There's a big difference between everything and anything.
That's right.
I can't try everything. All right, I understand that, but let's back it away a little bit. I can't try anything. Okay, there's middle ground in there.
I can't try some things, but I haven't got to the berry banana thing.
All right.
As a matter of fact, how interesting that I said berry banana. We were just talking about Barry Bonds.
How interesting? I don't know. On a scale of 1 to 10, maybe a 1?
I think it's very coincidental that we're talking about Barry Banana.
Yeah, but that's very...
Actually...
Coincidental is interesting, different than
we should start calling Barry Bond Barry Banana. What do you think?
I think we're out of time. Are you going to be here? Are you going to be here next week?
I'll do my very best.
Okay.
You don't seem very happy about that.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm just looking at all the stuff we didn't get to today.
We'll get to it next week.
You think?
No.
All right.
We'll probably have a new batch of things to talk about.
Well, next week is our big Ides of March show, so beware.
All right.
All right, there you go. Thanks very much for being here, my friend.
I love you, Rob.
I love you, too. And before we go, I want to say I love you, Mom. I miss you, Dad. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. Have yourself a great week. Thanks very much for listening. Tell your friends, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.